Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. We're continuing our series where we're talking to our therapists at Evoke to get you the opportunity to feel and hear their stories. And for those of you who have had Lauren Roberts as your therapist, you already know how lucky you were to have her as your therapist. So today I welcome Lauren Roberts, the primary therapist and assistant clinical director of our Evoke at Cascades program. Welcome, Lauren.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. I like to start off with, because everybody has a different journey and wilderness is such a, for many people, it's such a unique idea. Tell us a little bit about your journey to wilderness therapy. How did you get here? What were the influences that brought you on this path to wilderness therapy and to be a therapist at Wilderness Therapy Program?
That's a great question. Are you okay if I start like way back?
Yeah, as far as you want.
Okay. Well, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, so I wouldn't say that I had a ton of exposure to true wilderness as a kid. And yet I'm the oldest of four. I have three other siblings, and we were all just so attracted and drawn to wilderness. Like, we were the kids who were just outside from sun up to sundown. And I think, you know, neither of my parents are wildernessy, or, you know, they didn't camp. They weren't exposed to that as kids either. And so they didn't really necessarily know how to do that as parents. And, but they saw our love for it. And so I think it's to the best of their ability, they really nurtured it. Like, I remember camping in the backyard often, you know, we went up to Michigan a lot and we played at the beach, or there were streams there and we'd spend all day pretending like we were in the middle of the forest in the stream. And so there was real passion there. And so when I was in high school, my parents sought out opportunities for me and found essentially like a summer camp that specialized in backpacking and canoeing trips, and signed me, all my siblings ended up going through this camp in high school. And for me, that just ignited. I was like, this is it. I love this. This is, I'm happy here. I'm content here. I feel alive. I would just come back from these trips just incredibly empowered. It was really therapeutic. I didn't necessarily know as a 16-year-old that it was therapeutic, but I knew that something was lit up in me. Right. And, you know, a funny part of this backstory is I was really involved in musical theater, and actually was accepted to, you know, different colleges for musical theater, and kind of went in that direction for a little bit, and then ended up transferring to a school named Prescott College in Prescott, Arizona, as a sophomore, because after 1 year of college, I realized what I really missed was the outdoors and immersing myself in the outdoors. So I kind of changed paths and decided to pursue that, along with psychology, essentially. So I got a degree in human development, as well as wilderness pursuits, and still, you know, still got a minor in theater. So that's there. Right, didn't completely disappear. And I love presenting. So I guess that's how I get to still have that be part of my life. So when I was at Prescott College, there was tons of exposure to that. I mean, I actually took a class called Wilderness Therapy, where we spent 3 weeks in the wilderness canoeing and learning about wilderness therapy and the different techniques, and just really quite a bit of exposure to that with the professor who had worked in wilderness therapy. And then, so out of college, actually not long out of college, I actually found Evoke, which was called Second Nature at the time, mm-hmm. the branch in St. George, Utah. And I started there as a field instructor. And I spent some time working there as a field instructor, which was an incredible experience, I think, for me. It was actually really hard. I mean, if I'm being really honest, I think that's probably in some ways the hardest job I've ever had. Right. Because being on for 8 days and not really getting to step away or have those, obviously the wilderness was really grounding for me, but the other things coming back into your own life are also grounding. So really being immersed in it for 8 days was challenging. And I grew exponentially as a person, especially because I learned all the tools that we teach our clients and families in the wilderness. I got to learn those as a field staff. And that really changed the way I interacted as a human with the I feel statements, for example, or, being able to assertively communicate something that was bothering me or whatever it might be. I just really learned those tools that maybe I didn't have.
Right.
And I think that really, that experience as a field instructor really convinced me that that was the path I wanted to continue going. And so I had the opportunity to continue working with, again, Second Nature at the time, as a assistant therapist while I was going back and getting my master's degree, which was an incredible experience. I did that for 3 years, and I had the experience of rotating, working with a variety of the different therapists that were there at the time. So I just, I feel like I got an incredible amount of exposure. You know, I'd work for one, with one therapist for 6 months, then another therapist, sometimes one of them for a whole entire year. And so, and I think maybe five of them total I worked with. So I just, you know, the opportunity to be receiving my master's and in grad school, learning all this content, and then to see it in action, working with a therapist so directly was just really incredible training. And honestly, being a field instructor, I think prepared me for grad school in a way that I could have never predicted. And so it just kind of all just happened. I guess I'm giving you a very long-winded answer, but it all, when I look back at it, it all kind of happened very naturally. You know, I had some great mentors in college, actually some professors that I'm still in touch with today. Two of them stand out who really, you know, just said like, Lauren, this is where you shine. Like, I really see you moving forward as a therapist. I hope you pursue this. I think, you know, one of them was, she was a psychologist and did women's studies work. And that was what she focused on as a professor. And she was like, I hope you work with young women one day. Like, I think this would be amazing for you. And she was right. And that's, and I work with men and women now, which I feel passionate about, but it really kind of helped, I guess, just validate what I was passionate about and validate that would be a direction to move into.
Now, I of course have some insider information. Is this at originally Second Nature and then Evoke, is that where you met your husband, Sean?
No, I actually met him at Prescott College.
Oh, you did?
Yep. So he is a little bit older than me. So he graduated before I did, and he came to Evoke and was like, you have to come here too. Wow. You have to come work here. It's an amazing place. And he convinced me. And so I followed along.
Yeah, I have not known either one of you as an individual. You've always been Lauren and Sean and Lauren ever since I've known you. So I'm wondering if it was at Evoke or before. So you've worked in a few capacities, being a field staff and now, and an assistant therapist at one point. And now, of course, you're a primary therapist and the assistant clinical director at Evoke Cascades. So how does that evolution of your career within Wilderness Therapy, within Evoke, how does that shape you and the way that you think and conceptualize and work with people clinically?
That's a good question. I mean, one of my initial reactions is like, it's probably shaped me so much in ways that I take for granted, you know, that I don't even know. So I'm having to step back for a moment to think about that a little bit more objectively. You know, I think one of my reactions is sometimes working at a company like Evoke and having the privilege to be, you know, friends and colleagues with so many amazing people, you know, I forget sometimes that it's a bubble. And so when I step out of that bubble and I interact with the real world, quote unquote, sometimes that's when I realize, oh, wow, not everyone speaks like this or communicates in this way or sees the world in this kind of broader perspective. So I think that's one of the ways it shaped me. I think, you know, as a person, I would consider myself fairly calm and level-headed. And I think I'm particularly good at seeing a lot of different perspectives. Right. And I think some of that's maybe my nature, but I think that's absolutely been honed through this experience of Evoke. I think about just working with families and clients and field staff and, you know, everybody else. And it really forces you to have to kind of weigh out different situations and see lots of different perspectives and be able to meet people where they're at. Even if you're talking to, you know, for example, as a therapist, talking to a client who might see one perspective that's vastly different than how their parents see it, and really be able to hold space for both, truly hold space, where you get where the parents are coming from and you have empathy where they're coming from, but you can sit with the client and equally have empathy for where the client's coming from and then help them slowly but surely see each other's perspectives too, or see at least that they matter or see that they're relevant or valid in their own right. So I guess that's one of my initial reactions. You know, and like you said, my husband also worked at Evoke for a long time. So, you know, I have even a bubble in my own home.
Right.
you know, are both clinicians. So yeah, I think, you know, the way we talk, we check in a lot. We talk a lot about, you know, what we're feeling and what's going on for us. We create a lot of space for our kids to do the same thing, and they're very, very little. So, you know, you can imagine how that looks sometimes. I'm trying to think what else.
You know, one thing I've noticed about you, I've given you this compliment privately before, but I love to give it to you on this podcast. Of all the therapists I've worked with over the years, you're one of the best, if not the best, at being open-minded, but still challenging me or an idea that I might have or that somebody else might have. You do it so respectfully, but you do it with what looks like to me or sounds like to me an interest in the response, right? You're not just game to shoot it down, and you're not just a yes woman. You know, you're not just agreeing or remaining silent with the challenges you might feel to the idea. And so maybe that's what you talked about, the various perspectives that you have, that inclination you have toward seeing many sides. I know for me, one of the joys in working with you is that ability to challenge respectfully, but also listen to the answer and the response, and to challenge and be open-minded at the same time are two qualities that many people have a hard time holding simultaneously.
Well, that's a really nice compliment. I appreciate that. And I guess what came up for me, going back to your question, your original question of how has working at Evoke in all these different capacities shaped you, I do think that's the way. I think it's, you know, I think about when I first started as a field staff, and one of the most consistent pieces of feedback I received was essentially around my confidence and around owning my strengths, because I had a tendency to really dismiss my strengths as just kind of a part of me, like that those don't matter because they come naturally to me. So what, you know, but here are the things I'm not good at. Like that was kind of my, you know, MO as a young person. And I really got the feedback of like, your strengths are just as important. So I think some of the ways working here has honed me is getting that feedback and having to really sit with it and acknowledge, you know, work on my own journey of self-acceptance and self-love and confidence. And so I think, you know, it takes confidence to be a critical thinker, because I think that's essentially the feedback you're giving me, is to be, to have, that I do well with a critical thinking and being able to bring that to the table. Right. And I don't think that was always the case. I think that's something that has really developed probably over the last, you know, 15 years now, as an adult. So, I appreciate that. Yeah. And I'm married to a very strong critical thinker. So he also shapes me in that way.
That's for sure. So you mentioned along your journey, you've become a mother. Tell us a little bit about, I mean, that you have a unique perspective. You work with young people and their families that are struggling with mental health and addiction issues, and then becoming a mother after doing that work for many years. Tell me about the interplay between what has that work taught you about being a mother, and maybe even what has becoming a mother done to you to change you about the way that you think about children and families?
I feel like I have so many answers to that. You know, my first answer, I guess, is humility. Like, you know, just coming to the journey of motherhood with humility of like, I've never done this before, you know, and so I'm not going to be perfect at it. I am going to make mistakes. And if you read any of my blogs, you get to, you know, that I write for Evoke, I often use my children and my parenting as an example. Right. And typically it's around like a mistake I've made. I think about one I semi-recently, Brad, where we had our clinical call and you talked about just the idea that sometimes when parents share their emotions with their children as a way to manipulate. And I immediately thought about an incident that had happened like that week. And I was like, oh, yep. I absolutely did that. and I think I, you know, one option could be that I beat myself up and, oh, I should know this stuff. And I think another option is to learn and grow, which is essentially what we're asking the families we work with to do. So I think my hope is that I can offer myself that same opportunity, which is part of the reason I actually wrote the blog. I really wrote the blog for me, because I was grappling with this kind of, to me, in some ways, new concept. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, where's that line and when is it appropriate and when is it not, and how to be authentic in doing that as a mom. So I guess that would just be, you know, one of the many examples of just, you know, I don't always do it right. And I think that's why I kind of feel spoiled that I get to be part of this team and these clinical calls, because I am constantly learning new stuff as a clinician, but also as a mother. So they feel very intertwined, mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. And, I get to practice these things with my kids and yeah. So humility, I guess, is my first answer. I definitely don't always do it right. And I also think that I, have gotten good at just recognizing when I wish I would have done that different and then course correcting, without just beating myself up.
Right.
So that's been huge. I think maybe, if I hadn't had this experience working with Evoke all these years, I think I maybe would have a tendency to feel more guilty or beat myself up more. I think that's more in my DNA and the way I was raised to do that. So I think that's been really kind of a gift, and not to say that I never do that, but I think I do it a lot less than I would.
Right.
So that was one of my answers. I'm trying to think through the question again, because when you said it, a lot of different thoughts came up.
Just the interplay and working with families and how it's changed you as a mother, or even changed you as a therapist. I think that idea, I love this simple, fun quote that says, there is such a thing as a perfect parent. They just haven't had any children yet. I love the humility in that quote, because it is, you learn something, don't you, by being a parent, mm-hmm. that you can't learn any other way. And, mm-hmm. and it becomes humbling when we realize that all of our education and all of our training doesn't prevent the mistakes that we make, that are part of our woundedness that we carry around. So I think that's a real wonderful gift, at least from being the parent back to the clients, and especially the parents piece of it too. It's a real gift to be able to have both roles, I think.
It, absolutely. Yep. And I think just acknowledging that we all hit our limits, whatever those might be,
right.
I'm definitely not my best self as a parent at 3 a.m. Right. I'm just not. Right. And so, just acknowledging that, and giving some permission for it, and also, trying to do better. But, I think that's, some of how it influences me. I think I've always tended to be pretty empathetic for what the parents are going through. The parents of the clients we work with are going through. Most of them are really, in crisis. So, I think I've always been empathetic to that. I think I have definitely a new depth of empathy of, I can't think of how many times I've had parents say, but Lauren, and they lay out the exact scenario and say, well, what would you have done in this scenario? And honestly, half the time my answer is probably exactly what you did, because you were absolutely maxed. There, and let's look forward and what could look different in the future. So I think it has added a different level of empathy, and understanding. And even, sometimes a little humor, again, my kids are young, 3 and 1. So I haven't been through all those phases that most of the parents, I work with young adults primarily. So, we're talking about clients who are 18 to 25, and I haven't parented that age group, And so I think acknowledging that, and also sometimes I laugh because a lot of what parents describe, I'm like, well, that actually sounds a lot like my 3-year-old, right. And so there is sometimes some funny parallels and some similarities in like what it looks like, to hold boundaries for a 20-year-old the same way you were learning how to hold boundaries with your 3-year-old.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm surprised how similar the core tasks and issues are.
Yep. And I think one way it's really influenced me as a therapist is I've become so much more intimately aware of the attachment bonds that are formed immediately. Mm-hmm. And so my youngest is 1, and I think about at 1 year old, how attached she is, how attached we are, how much development has happened. And so I think it's really influenced how I see, the clients we work with who were adopted, especially clients who were adopted maybe a little bit later on and have been through foster care or, somehow in the system, or just when there has been those attachment breaks, and those can look lots of different ways. Adoption is just one kind of obvious example. But I think it's brought that to light in a whole new way, where I feel like I can talk to parents about that with even more awareness, more understanding, more depth, and kind of bring that light for them as well. Of just really looking at like why they might be struggling at these really, really deep, typically, pre-verbal ways. preconscious even. So I think that's another way. Mm-hmm. And then I guess my other, again, I'm answering this a lot of different ways, Brad, so you can cut me off, but mm-hmm. I've also been doing a lot of work around, intergenerational trauma. I did a presentation with my dad and my sister in Chicago. I think it was last May at IECA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really focused on that, you know, my dad's trauma and how that's impacted us as his children. And, you know, for me, really looking at how that also trickles down, how that impacts my kids. And so I've just been really working to unpack that on a personal level. And therefore I think being able to really do family work from that lens as well, of just acknowledging like that gets passed down generation to generation in so many different ways, you know, emotionally, genetically. Right. And it's just pretty profound kind of work. And so, I think that's influenced me too, is just kind of seeing, oh, wow, why did I just parent like that? Right. Oh, because that's how I was parented. And then let's look at my mom's core wound around how she was parented, you know, in this way. And it just, it's pretty powerful, enlightening work.
I wasn't at your talk that you gave with your family, but I don't think I've ever heard more glowing reviews about anybody's presentation that you did with your family. It seemed to be incredibly impactful to the audience that was present. So that it sounds like it was beautiful. Tell us a little bit about a Lauren client. What are the types of clients that you work with?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, I work with young adults, and young adults, you know, at Evoke Cascades, the nice part is, you know, oftentimes we can get a 17, 17 and a half year old, when it's appropriate, in a young adult group, especially if they're going to be turning 18 or just have that emotional maturity. So I'll just add that caveat. Co-ed, I work with males and females, which I really, especially for young adult groups, I like that blend. So a typical client for me, I mean, it's so hard, Brad, because, you know, I feel like we get, you know, the whole gamut. Right. But I definitely really like working with clients who are working through trauma. You know, that's some of the work I enjoy digging into. I am EMDR certified and use that in different ways in the field. I also just think my style, I think I create a really safe place. I think I'm just very relational. So I think clients are really willing to do some of that deeper work in the field and kind of set themselves up to continue doing that after Evoke. So yeah, I see a lot of clients that have some form of trauma or attachment, struggles, you know, definitely a lot of anxiety, a lot of depression. I would say I tend to get, I mean, often substance abuse is part of their history and their struggle, but it's typically not maybe their primary. Right. That's not to say that isn't a client I get some of the time. But I would say that's more of like a way they're coping, or you know, it hasn't necessarily reached addiction, although they might be heading in that direction. Right. So we're definitely addressing that as well. You know, just some of that co-occurring struggles.
How would you describe your style with your clients, mm-hmm. the approach you use?
Well, I really like working with young adults, I think because I'm pretty insight oriented. So I think, you know, you have to have a certain level of cognitive ability and emotional intelligence to be able to do insight oriented work. Again, I'm not wedded to that. There's certain clients that I, you know, I'm adaptable around that with, but that's the work I really enjoy doing, is really kind of digging in. And I think I do that in a very relationship based way. I'm definitely client centered, humanistic in a lot of my approach. And I think with that, I think I can be a very gently challenging therapist, you know, and sometimes my clients can even laugh like, oh, like you just like kind of poked that, you know, but I think I do it in a way that, I think they feel safe to go there. Right. And I think similarly, I think my family work is very similar, is I really try to create a safe place for parents to do their own work alongside, their son or daughter through this process. And also acknowledge their own trauma, right? I mean, I would even argue that any parent who has a child going through Evoke probably has some level of trauma, because even getting your child to a wilderness program is somewhat traumatic. It's a lot. So I think that's a lot of the work too.
Is there a particular, I know you and I get asked this question all the time, probably you more than me because you were a field staff and I wasn't, about powerful moments in the field that stand out to you, stories that you tell friends and family when you're thinking about a particularly profound moment. Is there one that comes to mind?
You know, I mean, the minute you bring it up, the one story, I mean, there's so many stories, so it's kind of hard to just pick one, obviously. But the one that stands out to me that I'll share, because I think it's so relevant in the sense of why wilderness therapy is powerful, is I was working with this young man, an adult male, who, I mean, he was just carrying like the weight of the world on his shoulders. You know, that was kind of his, just a lot of anxiety, a lot of sadness, a lot of depression. And what I love about the wilderness, I love a lot of things about the wilderness, but one of the pieces I love the most is how we can get experiential, and it doesn't have to just be talk therapy. And I think there's something to really be said about getting in our body. And so instead of having our typical session where we might sit in chairs around a fire and talk, him and I grabbed our backpacks and we hiked. There was this pretty significant, I'll call it like a butte, that we were hiking up. And it was hard. It was challenging. It was pretty vertical and pretty steep. And along the way, I just kept picking up rocks and being like, what does this rock represent? And he'd name it, whatever it was, like, you know, my dad and the pressure he puts on me to be the best son. Okay. And we stuck it in his bag. And we tried to be somewhat, you know, thoughtful about rocks matching the intensity of that within reason, because he was carrying these rocks, right? So we're also being thoughtful of that. Right. But he was in it, you know, and every time we pick up a rock, he'd stick it in his bag and he'd just kind of trudge along. And you could see it. He was just like, he was like trudging, and you could just see the weight, the literal weight, the physical weight. It was matching what I already saw in him of just kind of these hunched over shoulders, this kind of just the sense of being burdened. And we just kept hiking and hiking, and we got to the top and I said, okay, let's just explore what it would be like to let this go. And he kind of looked at me like, okay, like, what do we do? So he just renamed them, but started to reframe it. Like, what would it really let go of what you're, this burden you carry of having to be the best for your dad. And he just started screaming and yelling and chucking these rocks off the side of the cliff. And it was emotional. Like, it was intense. It was emotional. And by the end, he looked at me and it was kind of intimate, right? Because just me and him were on the top of this mountain kind of, and there's just this vastness around us. And by the end, he looked at me and there was a lightness about him. And again, it wasn't the end. It wasn't like this was fixed or cured, because it's unfortunately not that easy, but there was a shift. It was like, there was finally this moment of like, and he felt it, right? Because he felt the weight of carrying all that to the top of the mountain, releasing it, putting back on that backpack with nothing in it, no more rocks, and being able to hike back down. And it was interesting on the way back down the hill, we almost just chit-chatted. It was lighthearted. It was fun. I remember laughing a lot. I couldn't even tell you what exactly we said or talked about. But I think that was some of the power and the beauty of it, was he had the lightness to have a light conversation after this intense, intense moment or moments, right? I mean, it probably took us about at least an hour to get to the top and release all of this, probably more. Again, the beauty of wilderness, we're not confined by time limits. I could have a 2+ hour session with this kid because that's what he needed in this moment. Right. And I love that. And so, yeah. And I remember when he graduated the program and he was highlighting his experience, that was one of the moments he talked about being a turning point. So yeah, that's just the first memory. And there's so many like that, right, that I could go on, and I won't, but I think that just kind of highlights the power of it.
It's interesting because it reminds me of one of my earliest and maybe most profound moments with a student, and it had to do with the weight of a backpack also and the weight that he was carrying. And one thing I noticed about you, Lauren, and I think this has been true ever since I've known you, is I just want to talk to you. I just want to swap stories and ask more questions and go off script. So we've talked a little bit about ways in which being a parent has impacted your work. Going back to the idea, how has wilderness impacted you in your personal life? What are some of the effects that you've seen of its impact on you personally?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer this a couple different ways. I mean, the first easy answer is I continue to find wilderness to be one of the most grounding places for me. Like, if I ever need to clear my head or, you know, think through something, like, my first intuition is like to go for a run or go for a hike or just get outside. I have this beautiful front porch that I just sit on all the time because I'm looking out at the pine tree. So that's the quick, easy answer. I think two specific examples that come up that I think they come up because they're examples I find myself sharing sometimes in the field when I'm working with clients, because I think they tend to be really relevant.
Right.
I'm thinking about, you know, way back actually when I started Prescott College, something they do at Prescott College that I think is really neat is part of your orientation your orientation is to go on a 3-week backpacking trip with a group of people that you've never met. And that's how you start your college experience, which was incredible in so many ways. But one of the most profound moments I had on that trip was that still sticks with me to this day is I was, you know, carrying my big backpack. I'm sure it was, I don't know, 65, 70 pounds. I'm not a terribly large person. You know, I'm like 5'2" and rather small. And I fell with this big backpack on a slippery rock, and my knee landed on my knee, and my knee just swelled up immediately. It was pretty bad. And something I've never been particularly comfortable with, especially this was my 19-year-old self, is showing emotion. So I remember like really trying to like, you know, lock it up, like don't cry in front of this whole group of people you barely know,
right.
Which didn't go so well. And it was just very vulnerable for me to have to show like, I'm in pain, I'm uncomfortable, and I'm scared. We're in the middle of the wilderness. I would have had to find some way to hike out. I really didn't want to leave the trip. I wanted to see it through. I think we were about halfway through the trip at this point. And it ended up being that the only way for me to continue the trip was basically to let my knee heal and let everybody else carry my weight, literally. Mm. So I was able to continue hiking if I wasn't carrying a backpack. So they had to divvy up the rest of my weight to the whole group, which was so uncomfortable for me because I'd much rather carry two backpacks than carry no backpack any day.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and the feedback I got in this, you know, lasted for maybe about a week of the trip and till my knee was in a place where I could carry at least some of my stuff again. And some of the feedback I got later at the end of the trip about this was that how courageous I was. That was the feedback from these peers. I'm like, wow, that was so courageous. And, you know, thank you for letting us help you. And, you know, we really admire you sticking with this trip. And I was shocked because in my mind, I was weak and vulnerable, but vulnerable in my mind in a negative way.
Mm-hmm.
And couldn't hold my own and was, you know, negatively impacting the other people by burdening them. And that was not any of their experience.
Right.
And so I think I left that trip just with this kind of eye-opening experience of like, it's okay to lean on other people. It's okay to be vulnerable. All the Brene Brown stuff, right, that I know now.
Right.
It's okay to be vulnerable. In fact, people are really touched and opened by your vulnerability, which has ended up, you know, what happened. And I think that's a lesson I've really taken with me as I've moved on with my life, of just being able to kind of, lean on people when I have to. And that's still something that's hard for me at times, but I think it kind of opened up that possibility and that door. So that's one example. I think the other example that just pops into my head immediately, and I share this with clients a lot because for, you know, the clients and parents who've gone through Evoke, you know, oftentimes, not everybody, but the majority of clients do a solo experience where they spend a night or two, you know, by themselves. Obviously they're within, staff checks on them regularly and we can hear them if they need help, you know, all that kind of stuff. But they kind of had this experience of feeling like they're by themselves to really reflect, and work through stuff. And what I share with clients a lot is I've done actually a fair amount of wilderness solos in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. My guess would be at least 5, maybe 6. And, the vast majority have been really successful, but there's one that stands out that was, I just couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't even make it through the first night. There was a lot going on in my personal life and I just was not able to tolerate sitting with myself, which I was, you know, and this is when I had written, this was not my first solo. This was maybe like my third. And so there was a lot of self-judgment, a lot of self-critique, and finally of having to come to a place of acceptance of, you know, I'm going to go to these, you know, I was an adult, but I went to these leaders who were leading this and had to say like, kind of like, I surrender. I need help. I can't do this. I need support. And again, I think it's a very similar vein as my other story of just being okay with asking for help.
Mm-hmm.
I share this with clients a lot after their solos of like, hey, I'm trying to remember how old I was at the time. I want to say maybe mid to late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So I already had been working at Evoke. I was probably a therapist at the time, to be honest. So, I mean, I was pretty, you know, decently far along in my journey. And so, you know, when I talk to, you know, a 19-year-old who says, I couldn't get through my solo or I really struggle, I kind of raise my hand and go, I have so much empathy for that because, yeah, it's really hard. sometimes it's really hard to sit with ourselves. And sometimes we can tolerate it and it's amazing and beautiful. And sometimes we can't. And so being able to look at why that is and explore that and ask for the help you need sometimes is the most important part.
I think that's a wonderful thing that you offer to them to help them feel safe in their struggles. And I think solos are amazing. And I think so much of our life, I can relate to it, is it's, you know, a lot of my symptoms when they show up are my unwillingness or inability to be present in my own life. Mm-hmm. You know, my distractions, smartphone, food, whatever it is, they take me away from being present. And so that solo magnifies that. And it's not easy to do for any of us all the time.
Yep. Absolutely.
One of your roles here is a clinical supervisor, of course. So tell us a little bit about your approach. What does that look like? What does your supervision approach look like?
I've really enjoyed my work doing clinical supervision and working as the assistant clinical director. I started doing that last spring, really right after I came back from maternity leave. I stepped into that role, and a large portion of that role is doing the clinical supervision. And what that means is really supervising the other therapists that I'm working with at Cascades, which has been, more than anything, it's been an honor. I think we just have, I really feel strong. I think we have an awesome team and I work with amazing people. And so the opportunity to support each of them as therapists and the work they do as therapists in the field has been powerful, positive. You know, I meet with them regularly, you know, doing one-on-one supervision. I go out to the field and visit their groups at times. So that might look like sitting in on a group or sitting in on a session or possibly joining a phone call they want support on. I mean, it's really a pretty flexible role in that sense, where really my job is just to help support them and help grow them as therapists. I've learned a lot. I feel like it's been a really exciting learning edge for me in terms of kind of how I do that work. And I honestly, in some ways, I think it's really similar to how I work as a therapist. I think similarly, I'm very relational, I'm empowerment based. And I want that, you know, I'm helping them to grow. So I am pointing out, you know, maybe rough edges or things that they could improve on, and doing it hopefully in a way that feels palatable and something they want to join with me on and look at.
Right.
So I don't know if that answers your question, I think that's,
Lastly, I'd like to know about your personal passions, hobbies, recreation, self-care. I know you're a mother, you're a therapist, assistant clinical director. So I know a lot of your time is not yours, but there is some time that's yours. And how do you balance that? And what's your passion? What are some of your passions personally?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to answer this maybe a little bit more than you want me to, but something I've been thinking a lot about lately is just, I think I mentioned this earlier, in terms of what I was working on as a field staff. I think I'm working on it maybe in a little bit of a new way now, just that same concept of like self-acceptance and self-love, because as you mentioned, my time is fairly limited at the moment. So the little moments I get to myself, I have to be, I think, even that much more intentional about how I spend it. And so I've been really weeding through like what actually fills me up versus the shoulds. And I've always struggled with a lot of, you know, I should do this or I should do that, or I should be more like this. And when I really cut it all back, I was laughing about it the other day, like the two things, if I really have time to myself beyond just napping, because that's always a big temptation right now in my life, right, taking a nap. But beyond that, you know, I love to read. I mean, I really love to read, and especially, you know, just really like a historical fiction, you know, is probably my favorite genre. Just something that I can really kind of sink my teeth into and has a lot of, I don't know, kind of is juicy and interesting and kind of pulls me into a different world. And I love to be in movement. So whether it's outside, hiking or skiing, mountain biking is something I really love to do. Road biking, I oftentimes try to road bike to the office. The office people are really used to seeing me in my road biking gear. And exercising. I mean, if I can even just get a few moments to just exercise in some kind of way and just move my body, that's probably when I'm most happy. So those are the two things I'm probably most focused on now beyond just, you know, being a mom and working.
Have you read all of Eric Larson's book or some of Eric Larson's book, like The Devil in the White City?
I haven't. I've heard of it, but I have not read it.
I love it, especially being from Chicago.
That's true. I had a friend who read it and recommended it. So I need
great.
To look at that.
It's great. And his book on Dead Wake is also, I love historical fiction a lot also.
How he's awesome.
Really good at it. well, thank you, Lauren. I said this to you when I said this in Chicago. I talked to the team about how grateful I am that I think we have over in my entire career. I think we have the strongest team that I've ever seen, and so grateful for everybody. And what I've said about you for many years, and I've said this behind your back many times. when I'm talking about you with a potential family or a therapist, I say unequivocally, I would send my son or daughter to Lauren. And that's the highest praise I think as a father that I can give to somebody. And I really have, I've felt that for years. Of course, I feel it today. And I'm grateful for the compelling authenticity and genuineness that you bring to the work and to our team. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Brad. I appreciate that.
One more question. Mm-hmm. Favorite musical?
Oh, it's so hard to choose. As a kid, Singing in the Rain. I love Singing in the Rain growing up. I love Les Mis. Rent's a classic, you know, all those classic ones. And I haven't seen a lot of the new ones. I need to get my butt back to Chicago or New York. And like, I haven't seen Hamilton yet, for example.
We got to get you.
I know.
Where it's playing. Well, thanks, Lauren. And thanks for joining us. And of course, I've said this to some of the other people. We shouldn't make this a one-off thing. Join us again sometime when you have some thoughts that you want to share.
Great. I'd love to.
All right. Thank you for joining us, folks, to our continuing series as we talk to our therapists and staff at Evoke. Thanks for listening and tuning in. And take care of yourselves. Bye-bye.